Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering.
We had a lot of haze up there today, a lot of smoke, and that was all due to wildfires out west.
It's these huge amounts of smoke coming from out west. They go up high in the sky and the jet stream winds.
Some of the most extreme cases out west, the smoke actually filters out parts of visible light, giving that orangish Martian look to the sky.
Notice that hazy sky these last few days? Well, you heard it correctly. It is smoke from the massive wildfires on the west coast, which has made its way all the way to New England. On top of extraterrestrial skies, we are coming out of the hottest summer on record here in Massachusetts. Down south, Hurricane Sally is bearing down on the Florida coast, with tropical storms Teddy and Vicky forming in the Atlantic. Meteorologists say we are barely halfway through an unusually active Atlantic hurricane season, and there is only one name left, Wilfred, on the 21 name list used for storms. Climate change has exacerbated West Coast droughts and the intensity, duration, and impact of hurricanes on the South Coast, so we want to take stock on how these climate change fuel events resonate here in New England. We've got two guests to do that. First, joining us is Michael Rollins. He's an associate professor at UMass Amherst and associate director of the school's Climate System Research Center. Hello, Michael.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you. I'm also glad to welcome Ibrahim Lopez Hernandez, a climate justice organizer with Green Roots. Green Roots is an environmental justice organization based in Chelsea, Massachusetts. Welcome to you as well, Ibrahim.
Hi, Tiziana. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. And listeners, we're glad to have you too. Have you noticed the smoke in the sky this week? Are you worried about the long tail of these climate fuel events for us here in New England and the larger climate change concerns we know we're facing? How are you feeling about it? What are you thinking about it? 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Michael, I will turn to you first. What are these hazy skies, this orange 6 a.m. over New England, signal to you?
Well, what these fires signal to me is that there's something very unusual going on out west. And it's not uncommon for us to see hazy skies like this from fires in the west. Typically, western Canada, often in the summertime, there'll be large fires. But the degree of fire burning out west right now is what's most alarming. And what we're seeing this summer in the fires out west is really just part and parcel of what's happening to our environment. And particularly out west, the warming has been exacerbated by a decades-long drought. And that's just providing ample conditions for this trend toward there's essentially been about a five-fold increase in wildfires out in the western U.S. And this is just consistent with our understanding of climate warming.
So before I turn to Ibrahim, one more question for you on that. We did just have the hottest summer on record and what's been called a not-so-normal fire season in Massachusetts. And you got the report out from the National Center for Atmospheric Research on how a rapidly warming Arctic will impact us. Longer winter storms, longer heat waves. How do we wrap our head around so much change all at once? Is this an alarming amount of change?
It does seem like an alarming amount of change in such a short amount of time. When you spoke about the tropical systems in the Atlantic, were record number of storms, our record warm summer here in Massachusetts, and we can expect these climate impacts will just continue on in the future given our amount of burning of fossil fuels and the limited amount of mitigation we're doing right now. We really have to adapt to these changes, particularly across eastern Massachusetts. Sea level rise is one of the most impactful things we're going to be experiencing in years to come.
Listeners, share your concerns and questions, too, on the impact of these climate events that we're seeing around the world, how they affect us in New England, and what our future is like here. 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Ibrahim, this haze in the sky, hottest summer on record. These are the impacts of a changing climate. All of us can feel them or see them in a visceral way. But in a community like Chelsea, the impacts of climate change are really being felt every day. How are you reacting to these changes that Michael and I have been talking about? And how's your organization reacting?
Yeah, so Chelsea has been feeling the impacts of climate change for years, and now with COVID, it's even more exacerbated, and we've been able to see it even more since we have a lot of essential workers, for example. A lot of them have to be outside, and during the summer, it was extraordinarily hot. So urban heat island climate impacts have really been felt, and for example, Green Roots has partnered with Boston University in trying to address how urban heat island is affecting our essential workers in Chelsea and see how their health is being impacted and what are the pros, the cons, and the barriers to actually having a healthy life. So that's one of the key things that we've been working on this summer. We're also trying to address sea level rise, which is another big component for the Boston area, trying to expand our green space, our parks, so that our low-income residents can also have equitable access to these benefits, and also trying to protect our infrastructure. We have the largest produce center, and there are a lot of essential workers also working there, and that's also directly threatened by climate impacts.
And what are you hearing from residents, Ibrahim?
So right now it's very difficult for a lot of families who still have work, who have the privilege of still having work, trying to maintain a healthy lifestyle. Maybe they were used to walking outside or trying to get some exercise, for example, and now they have to be inside due to COVID, except for going to work. Most of them can't afford air conditioners or maybe don't have air conditioning. And so there's a very big economic barrier to trying to keep cool when they used to do it outside and would rely on those public resources such as parks. So there are a lot of barriers in trying to keep healthy, and our old housing stock and the very old infrastructure that we have in place doesn't help either.
Let's grab a couple calls here, 800-423-8255. We've got Josh on the line from Brighton. Josh, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up the observation that I made is that this just goes to show how interconnected the entire country as well as the globe is in this fight against climate change, and how a fire out in California can affect people in here or out here in the West or the East Coast. And I think it's really just amazing.
Thanks for the call, Josh. I'm going to add one more caller voice. We've got Bill on the line from Ashby. Bill, go ahead.
Hi, I live in Groton. I'm just out taking a drive. It's such a nice day. And I'm struck with how few trees have changed. They're all green. There's hardly any color. And I think it's because, as you said, it was the hottest summer on record.
Well, let's turn to Michael about that, Bill, and then we'll go back and pick up the question about interconnected and how we go forward together here. Is that why the trees are still green, Michael? Do we know?
I believe it's my understanding that we're just a little bit early to be seeing the leaves change out here, that we're expecting that is a little bit more toward early October, my understanding.
So not necessarily a sign of global warming or the kind of heat we had this summer.
No, but what we are seeing, though, is you see a lot of drought stress in a lot of the vegetation. So with a record warm summer, you have a very high evaporative demand. The atmosphere is basically thirsty. So if we look at the measure of how much evaporation from the surface this summer, it was really, really tremendous. And with this short-term drought we've had a lot of really stress for the vegetation in this area.
And Ibrahim, you know, Josh said, hey, we are all in this together. This shows how interconnected we are and that we're going to have to act together. Are you finding allies and support outside of Chelsea? And how are you plugged into the larger green movement? You know, and what are the next steps you're working toward?
Yeah, so Green Roots has been in extensive talks and has been collaborating with a range of different stakeholders in Massachusetts, for example. One of the key things that we've been doing is working towards a state legislature bill to try to identify and actually recognize that there are environmental justice communities, for example, which would really bring out the necessary recognition that Chelsea and other geographies such as East Boston, that they are very, very vulnerable to climate impacts, for example, and that there are very specific barriers to that and injustices happening. We're also trying to collaborate with a roundtable on the Green New Deal and also having conversations there. So we're also reaching out and getting ideas and sharing ideas to try to help Massachusetts.
Do you have good partners in Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, Governor Charlie Baker, the Massachusetts State House?
So we've been having conversations, and that's specifically Maria Belen, who has been on the legislative level. But in terms of on the ground bootstraps with the city of Chelsea and also the city of Boston, we've been having conversations and planning towards how to best center our efforts and not doubling them, and then addressing, for example, sea level rise, our urban heat island effects, and trying to make people have better livelihoods in that sense. So we're definitely in conversations, and we're collaborating with our city stakeholders.
Michael, sometimes with these big systems level dynamics, processes, I find myself just wanting to ask somebody, how bad is it? So here in the Commonwealth, the threat for us of climate change right now, the impacts we're already seeing in these hot summers and the drought, et cetera, you know, how bad is it?
Well, it's been getting worse, and it's going to get worse in the future. I think that's the thing we need to keep in mind is we have an ability to mitigate some of the warming if we act. And I should mention that the Northeast U.S., unfortunately, is one of the fastest warming parts of the U.S., and that's expected to continue. By the time the global average temperature reaches 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial, which it will likely do later in the century, the Northeast U.S. will have warmed by likely 3 degrees Celsius. So some of these impacts we see are seeing now are only going to get worse. It's really, really imperative that our elected officials act in order to mitigate the upcoming impacts we're expected to see that only get worse with time.
Let's pick up one more caller here, 800-423-8255. We've got Jean on the line from Brookline. Hi, Jean. Go ahead.
Hello. I'd like to make the point. I'm a citizen of Brazil, and I do live in Brookline, Massachusetts. I'd like to make the point about how governments in such this vibrant nations with so much natural resources, such as Brazil, the United States, Mexico, and how corruption is so intertwined with bad policy in this country, failing us and failing our environment as well.
Thank you for that, Jean. I don't want to pick up on the corruption thread, but I do want to pick up on the government thread. This week during a meeting in California, officials there pushed the president to acknowledge the role of climate change in the wildfires. And the president said, quote, "It'll start getting cooler. You just watch," end quote. Climate change has not been a big part of his agenda. Were that to continue to be the case, we're in an election year. Ibrahim, Michael, can state and local leaders make up the difference if federal leaders are not taking action? Can this be a coalition of states in the United States who can make forward progress? Michael.
I think that states and local officials are stepping up and are doing their part. There's obviously some limits to what can be done at more local levels, but it's my understanding that a lot of places are acting to adapt and to mitigate. And in the absence of more effective, if you will, federal leadership, I think it's important that states and local officials who do recognize the impacts and what we're seeing to act in the best interest of their constituents.
Ibrahim, I want to follow up on that question with you and bring the coronavirus into this context as well. We know that Chelsea is a community that has been disproportionately affected by the virus. We know that there are serious environmental justice issues for Chelsea as well. One of the things that we've heard people talk about in the last 6 months is the level of collective action we've been able to achieve in response to the virus and how that compares with the struggle to achieve that collective action on climate change. How do you think about that?
Well, I think that the coronavirus crisis that has hit East Boston and Chelsea Everett particularly hard is a good proxy, a good example of how we could come together and focus on climate change. With all the difficulties to try to help our residents, we've still managed to rally up with allies and try to help them as best we can, especially immigrants, our immigrant community who doesn't have the same access to benefits. For example, we managed to get $1.5 million through a very big recollection effort to help everybody in Chelsea. So I think that that is a very good framework to try to see how we can bring that towards climate change and then being able to have actual change on the ground.
Ibrahim, I just want to acknowledge we're having a little bit of line quality issue. I just want to acknowledge that for listeners in the background there. I think the thing I'd want to ask the two of you last, this is overwhelming, it's scary, it's urgent. Where do you find hope and see the most resilience right now? Michael, I'll invite you to go first.
I see a lot of hope in the increasing number of Americans, if you will, that recognize that our climate's changing and that are interested in seeing solutions posed and that they really accept the signs. It's really been encouraging the last few years to see that trend. And I think that's where our hope lies, in the fact that many of us are recognizing this threat and are willing to accept solutions that will get us closer to carbon neutral, which we need in order to start lowering our carbon concentrations in the atmosphere. So that gives me a lot of hope.
Ibrahim, how about you? And I'll note, I thought this was really interesting. You moved to Massachusetts from Puerto Rico after the devastating 2018 Hurricane Maria. Where are you finding resilience and hope?
I think that I'm finding hope with seeing how motivated our residents and organizations are in trying to rally around addressing climate change, even with the absence of federal guidance and help. Coming from Puerto Rico and having lived through Hurricane Maria and actually seeing how bad it could get, it's a motivating factor. Having that experience is exactly what I want to avert now that I'm having my life here in Massachusetts. And yeah, very excited to try to help out with that experience.
I'm glad to hear that. That's Ibrahim Lopez Hernandez, a climate justice organizer with Green Roots. Green Roots is an environmental justice organization based in Chelsea, Massachusetts. Ibrahim, thank you.
Thank you.
And Michael Rollins, an associate professor at UMass Amherst and associate director of the school's Climate System Research Center. Michael, thanks to you too.
Thanks for having me.